Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl. I got a question this morning that I thought you might have some insights on, since you worked with suppliers and you worked with suppliers and probably, I don't know, maybe how far along that supplier chain have you ever gone for?
Maybe three tiers.
Okay. Yeah. I had one. It was a hard drive that had a plastic encapsulated component on it. That's second tier. The fabrication of those things was the fab house, the third, and they bought raw material for flame retardant. So four tiers down, because they changed the grain size of the flame retardant, which led to the actual failure. And to this day, I don't know where in the world they harvest this raw material or where they process it. I just don't know. But one of the questions I got this morning was related to basically what's our role in working with suppliers and the suppliers' suppliers. And my first thought was, what is it you need to know, or how do you offer what is of use to them so that they want to listen to you, kind of that realm. And one of the answers, a comment came across that was, well, you can never trust suppliers. So you just have to, double check everything and test everything and audit them regularly and all that. I'm like, I don't think that's right. but I couldn't quite put my finger on, is there a certain policy or set of rules we got to play with, or is there a different approach to this? What do we do sitting here as a reliability person?
You opened up a big topic. let me jump in on one part of it, and then I'll move to another part. I got two thoughts that come to mind right away. First one is we're in the reliability world, and supplier reliability has not been well thought through in a lot of companies.
You're jesting, I'm sure.
and let me explain. Supplier quality is well thought through.
Yeah.
You can go down the hall and you'll find somebody that on their door says supplier quality, but you won't really find someone a door that says supplier reliability in a lot of companies. Mm. Not that you need to, but I'm just saying it's not as well thought through. Incoming parts, where you're talking measurements and incoming quality and that type of thing. But does the part work through all of its all of its life and interfacing with all the other subsystems under all the environments from the supplier viewpoint is not as well thought through. And that's a topic of its own. And how can we manage that? But the other thought that comes to mind is the subject of management versus leadership. And what I mean by that is we can manage suppliers where you have a checklist of things to do and you have certain guidelines to follow, and then you just check the box that you did this and this.
Oh, yeah, I saw one of those ones where it was, that I opened up a box. I was down in the receiving area and just kind of talking to folks down there and wanted to see what they're doing, and opened up a box, and right on top of the box was a control chart. It surprised me. What's a control chart doing in a box? And one of the techs said, oh, we require them to send us a control chart with every shipment. And I says, well, what do you do with it? And it goes, nothing. It's the same one. They've been sending us the exact same control chart for the last 3 years. So we just throw them away.
So that's management by checklist or something.
Yeah, exactly.
And the same thing on FMEAs for years in automotive, and to some degree they're still doing it, is the requirement is an FMEA done by all suppliers on all parts. And it is a checkbox where you say, okay, they did it, and they warrant it's a good one, and we're going to accept it. So leadership, on the other hand, is a different subject. And I'm drawing on some experience where I've taken management classes and leadership classes. And leadership is more about what are the things you need to do, doing the right things, not just doing what you're told or doing what's on the checklist, but doing what you think is the right thing to do and being driven by principles.
Yeah. I would add to that one is being able to convey that clearly so you can bring others along with you.
Yeah.
I think that's why it's called leadership, is you're creating the checklist. But it's not one that will stay around forever. This is in this circumstance. Here's the problem. We got to go left and then up the hill, as opposed to whatever's on the previous checklist.
Right, right. And so I'm thinking about my experience as a, quote, manager, and where I was drawn, the excitement I had about being a manager was leading and developing leaders. And so when I had people that worked for me, for years and years, I would try to develop them into leaders in their own right, in their own realm. In other words, I'll give you two types of people. One is the type of person, and I remember their names, and is the type of person that says, "Tell me what to do."
Right.
Tell me exactly what to do, and I'll do it. The other type of person says, "Where are we going? What are the guidelines? Where are the edges?" And if you work with that person, you can inspire them and lead by more leadership principles, and they'll take off.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do more than you expect.
Yep.
And so there's these two types of people, and I think it sort of embodies, and I've seen so many managers in my past that they think their job is just to do what they're told. They're supposed to cut the budget or to do this or that. And other people look at what the company's trying to do and figure out what they need to do to contribute to the objectives of the company and go beyond what is being expected of them. So I just had those thoughts come to mind when you brought up the supplier. And how does it go back to supplier? Well, how about we develop suppliers? How about we have part of the purchasing to make sure we hire suppliers that have the kind of qualities that you want. In other words, get a place at the table,
right,
as a reliability manager on how you bring in suppliers. I mean, I'm just giving sort of brainstorming of things that...
Well, that was along the lines, which I'm not surprised by, is along the lines of what I was... My response to this question this morning was... If you treat your suppliers like the adversaries and you just start with the premise that they're trying to cheat us or they're the enemy or we can't trust them, you've kind of got a spiraling death process here. You're just in a race to the bottom here. And it's not conducive to actually learning and improving and getting the objective of getting components or parts or materials from the supplier that actually meet your needs. And so the response was, and it was related to, like supplier, it was, well, this is an opportunity that you need to start well before you have a problem with a supplier. But if you treat your suppliers like an adversary, then that demonstrates to them that, well, if the big companies do that, that must be what I want to do for me to be a big company.
It reminds me of a Pygmalion principle. I mean, what's the name of the movie that years ago? I'm going to forget the name. It's in England. My Fair Lady.
Oh, yeah.
It's based on Pygmalion principle, but the whole concept is you treat people the way that you want to be treated, the way you want them to be, and they're more likely to move in that direction. It doesn't mean you have your eyes closed.
Right.
If you get a bad apple or somebody make mistakes, obviously it needs to be fixed. But you're going to go so much better if you treat people with respect and in a positive way.
Well, beyond that, I agree. But from a reliability point of view, I mean, the conversation for whoever is engaging with a supplier I think there's some key questions, and the reliability people have to take the leadership position of enabling the procurement organization or the design team or whoever is engaging with suppliers, because we just don't have the bandwidth to do every supplier conversation.
Is, right.
you know, here's our situation. It's not a trade secret, guys. You know, we're going to put this in a box that's going to run at 60 degrees C and have this much vibration. Will your component work in that environment, or should we pick something else? It's an honest question. They should know. And if they don't, it'd become evident in their answers. But it's also then, we understand that you have suppliers, right? Which components or which elements of your process are critical for the functionality that we're looking for? And so I had that conversation with a capacitor vendor, and they said, a critical component for us is the slurry that makes up the dielectric ceramic that goes into these capacitors. If that is got impurities in it, or if it's got some other element, if it's not in spec, basically, it is very likely that this capacitor, even though it will have the measured capacitance it's supposed to have, it'll be very susceptible to cracking. And so curing that is very difficult if it's the wrong mix. And, oh, I didn't know that. Well, how do you control that? You know, and they were like, well, we trust them. And he says, well, do you think maybe a control chart would happen? Well, we don't know about control charts. Well, let me give you a quick class on it. Here's a book, you know. Came back 6 months later, they had it implemented. They were teaching their suppliers how to use it, as opposed to saying, well, don't let them send you bad stuff. I was like, well, let's teach you a tool that will help you manage that process that's critical for you. You get better at what you're doing, because if you get better, we get a better product and we'll keep doing business with you, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, and you're saying it so well for the what you said earlier, and then you're continuing on the same thread, is don't wait for the supplier to do something wrong.
Oh, no, it's way too
late. Work with them up front on what are the conditions for success. One of my mentors years ago, and is a good friend and a mentor on my career, always would ask, what are the conditions for success? No matter what we're working on, we'd say, okay, what needs to be in place to be successful? And if you're talking suppliers, there's some things that can be done and should be done up front, like you're discussing, Fred, that will create or help create success. And some people might say, well, that's not exactly my job. I don't know. You know?
Yeah, from a reliability point of view, at the end of the day, that sounds cliche when I say it, but we want our product or system to operate as expected over time for our customers. We want it to be reliable or available or whatever it is that their expectations are. And a good part of almost every, we're not doing Henry Ford factory totally vertically integrated anymore. Right. Mm-hmm. So our job is, where'd that raw material come from? How pure is it? And we don't have time to track down every single thing of that. But if we can get to those critical to reliability or critical to quality, as is often used, with honest discussion with our key suppliers, you know, material that say, if this fails, our whole system fails. Or if this is, you know, not as we expected it, and we don't understand how it's made, and we need to know more about it. But I think it's understanding those critical pieces of it. And it may take you back through the supply chain a handful of times. And it's not unheard of to say, all right, we know that you buy components, but we're going to give you a list of preferred suppliers for those components. And they might go down 2-3 layers in the supply chain. It becomes a condition of the purchase. But I think it has to come coupled with, hey, we can teach you about HALT. We can teach you SPC. We can help you solve problems. We've got failure analysis capability that can help you solve problems so that you get better at what you're doing, and vice versa. They have capabilities we don't have outside of the purchase thing that's of value to both teams.
An important part of what you're saying is focusing on criticality, the vital few. Mm-hmm. The successes I've had with suppliers starts with, from an OEM or start from a systems point of view, starts with, what are the critical parts? What is most critical? Because you can't spread your time over the thousands of parts that are involved in a complex system. But you can spread your time for the vital few. And so maybe there's 5, 10, 15, 20 for a given program that are most critical.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about how you determine that. But once you do, those are the ones that where you need to build those relationships and make sure that we get those right. Everything else gets due care, but those vital few get extra care. And that's where I think, and then you were talking about even inside a part or a supplier, then there could be critical parts within that supplier. So you could have critical suppliers on things and then critical parts there, but it all follows the Pareto principle
yep.
in working on the vital few.
Well, I think it does two things though. One is that as in an individual within an organization, it's showing that you have the initiative and the leadership to say, hey, let's hold these discussions. Let's ask these questions. Let's follow through on these concerns or uncertainties and go solve those things. And while you could easily say, oh, that's the design engineer's problem. Well, that's material science group's area. Well, that's the procurement teams. They should be doing that. If they're not, do it. It's the right thing for achieving the reliability of your product. But I think more importantly, it shows that and I never asked permission, and I got chewed out a couple of times. Oh. How dare you teach these guys how to do SPC?
Right.
They're going to share that with all, and their products will get better, and it'll get better for all of our competitors. Like, yeah. So you just want the crap products they're sending us now? Well, don't we help them actually improve so that we and others will get that benefit. But it's all ships rise with the tide here, guys. It's not. They have to figure it out on their own to prove themselves. No, let's put a hand out there and help them look at the problems they're facing in a way that we've already learned and vice versa. There's stuff they've learned that we don't have a clue about and we can learn something too. Just because we're writing the check doesn't mean we know it all. And I had those discussions and they left me alone. Let me go on and go keep doing it. But it you know,
work on that team.
Yeah, but it's the idea is that you can exhibit leadership in so many different ways. And I agree with you, Carl, is managing is just following the list and saying, all right, we received their products. It's bad. Let's open a Kappa and next month we'll chew them out because they're not solving this problem fast enough. Well, no, it doesn't work that way, guys.
I think back to, my years working inside of the large vehicle company, GM, and the some, not everybody, but some people were highly concerned about who pays for the warranty problem.
Mm-hmm.
And in other words, the viewpoint was, well, that's a supplier problem. We don't have to worry about that because we're going to make them pay for it.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I remember thinking to myself, that's just not right. Okay, I don't care. You can have set up your accounting rules and we can pass and share expense. And they did a lot of work and there were a lot of positives because they talked about shared expense and things. But the key is not to say that has nothing to do with me because that's somebody else's job. And no, when you're an integrator, if you get bad systems and bad parts, your systems are not going to work.
Yeah, it's your nameplate on the thing. The customer's not going to go say, oh, hey, you know, Titleist, you owe us a better fabric on top of this dashboard. They don't even know who's made that dashboard. I don't think Titleist does that. I think they make golf balls.
It reminds me, remember when ISO 9000 first came out?
Oh, man, I looked at that and went, this is a joke. That might be a subject for a whole nother podcast, but I was like...
It is a subject in that... I have so many stories that they're all coming up here, but one was Patrick O'Connor, who I dearly love when he was active, and I brought him into a GM once because he and I shared a lot of a similar philosophy, and he did a talk to management, and he just blasted ISO 9000 because the point of it. Was, and I don't, it's been revised many times and I don't really want to speak to that, you know, has this problem been addressed? But originally the concept was, let's figure out what you're doing. Let's document it and let's make sure you do it.
Right.
Now that's not a recipe for success.
No, I actually talked to one of the auditors that was, you know, qualifying companies. And he says the easiest by far quickest way is to write a policy document is that we make the decisions in the moment and that's our technique.
Yeah.
And he walked around the organization and says, what's your policies? Well, we gather the appropriate information and we make a decision on the spot. And they said, well, you documented it and you have evidence that you do what you say you do. It's a one-page process. Everybody seems to understand it. And it doesn't mean that they had a good or a bad program. It actually was a very good program. But their approach to setting guidelines for their employees was, you need to make good decisions. Let's practice that. And
yeah.
And right. You've run into companies, they'll have binders full of processes. And then they do audits and audits and audits to make sure that when the auditor shows up, that they're doing what they think they're supposed to be doing. And it's like, oh my God.
Yeah, this is such an interesting subject. The and you're right, we'll go into a different podcast, but yeah. there's the fault line between doing things the way you're supposed to do them or the way they're supposed to be done versus doing the right things, selecting the right things and leading the company in that way. And I just had a problem from the beginning with ISO 9000 because of that. Because if we have lousy processes, we're not successful, but we can document them and I can prove to you that we're doing them and we'll get some kind of certification. That does not make sense in terms of achieving quality.
Yeah. See, that's where I think the leadership part comes into play, is that, you know, yeah, the organization wants us to get ISO certified because lots of customers are expecting it. So, all right, whatever. And part of the process that we used was, well, what is it that we do? What is our process? And I got some operators and techs together and a couple other engineers, and we'd map out a process.
Yeah.
And then it was Nancy, one of the leads in one of the departments, said, well, we don't do it that way. We do it this way. And the swing shift folks were saying, no, that's wrong. We do it this way. And so instead of saying, let's pick one, let's vote on it. And I was in a position where I could say, this is the way we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, well, which way is better? Which way leads to, you know, a less scrap? Or I think that was the circumstance in that particular case, but which one leads to our products being more consistent or better at the end of the day? Can we agree that that's what we're trying to achieve? And they're like, yeah. So we set up an experiment, went out and measured it. And Nancy was right. That was a good way to do it. And gave Nancy the credit for, you know, coming up with an improvement to a process. And then we documented that. But instead of being a slave to a particular documented process, it was, if we have a better way of doing it, let's create a culture where that's okay. And yeah, we're going to do an experiment and that's okay. We're going to learn from it and measure it. And if it makes sense, then we're going to adopt it and give people credit where it's due. And that created a culture that created that continuous improvement and continuous learning, as opposed to do it A, then B, then C.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, no, you brought it back to leadership, which is very good, because the leadership aspect of this is we need to work on doing the right things before we start documenting that what we're doing. Get the right processes in place, and I'm all in favor of, you can document and make sure it's known to everybody and do training and things like that. But there's got to be that step doing the right things, making sure that we're heading in the right direction and have the right processes in place before we work on compliance to the processes.
Yeah. Another aspect of this, Carl, and well, I think we're going to spin off into like six more topics here. Let me
yes.
pause.
Probably a good place to round off, because we've touched on some subjects that I'm very curious if the listeners have any feedback or input to. We've talked about how to work with suppliers, what makes for good relationships, what about leadership versus management we've touched on, and we've touched on compliance to processes, a whole bunch of things. What are your thoughts as listeners? Do you know what works, or can you share with us what works and doesn't work from your point of view?
Yeah. Or if you have a question that's related to any of these or any of our previous topics, we'd love to hear from you. And I mean, literally, over on ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR is a little widget from SpeakPipe. that allows you to hit a button. And if your device has a microphone, which most do these days, it seems, you'll be able to leave up to a 90-second comment or question. And if it's, you know, please listen to it, make sure it's clear so that it's understandable. And then we'll incorporate it into a future podcast and actually hear your question or comment. And you can join the conversation that way. You can also get a hold of us, obviously, through email, through the contact form that's on that particular page, or through LinkedIn. There's lots of ways to get in touch with us. And we do certainly do enjoy hearing from you, love hearing from you, and look forward to your comments. So that, Carl, let's say, which of the six or seven different topics we just kind of broached into you want to get into next? Or should we wait for the next one?
I would love to talk about applying some of what we talked about here into leading teams. And so that's it. Let's think about that one for the next podcast.
Okay, good. That makes sense. Talk to you soon, Carl.
Thanks, Fred. See you later.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.